Yes, indeed. Hello again. Welcome back. It is once again time for Less Than Jays. It is once again time to talk about baseball. It is once again showtime. Welcome in. Welcome back. Your Blue Jays are 10-9. They just outright refuse to sweep a series. Doesn't really seem to matter what is going on. But we have had some, I don't want to say downs and ups. We've had some frustrating games. Yeah, it's been very much 10-9. They've been fine. Not anything too crazy. Series wins over the Yankees and Colorado and Seattle, and a series loss to the Yankees before that in New York. Before that, Jake, it's been 2 weeks already, quickly, somehow, some way. It's an off day right now, coming off of a series against the Yankees. The bitter taste of blowing game three of that Yankee series out of your mouth. How are you feeling about your 10-9 Blue Jays?
You know, to be honest, I'm not quite sure. They're in their simplicity and in their predictability, they are somehow kind of hard to figure out.
Sure.
Like, if you had asked me what I kind of thought I don't want to say tactics, but the shape of 2024 Blue Jays games would look like 3-ish weeks into the season, this is pretty close to what I expected. What I didn't expect is the 3 straight series wins while feeling so non-convincing, but also somehow giving hope as well. Like, it's very, I feel like had they held on yesterday and swept the Yankees, even though it's only 11-9 versus 11-8 versus 10-9, I feel like that would have made everything feel more like it was coalescing into something legitimate rather than just sort of the ebbs and flows of a baseball season,
if that makes sense. Yeah, it does make sense. It does feel like, I mean, we talked about this a lot last year, was they never went on the big run. They never had the sustained, and it does feel like they are once again right back to being that team that is good and is playing, you know, on a large sample, playing just fine, and yet can never take more than 2 steps in the right direction before, you know, giving away a game in the Bronx or having, you know, the bats go out when it matters least. You know, they are, we said it last week after their first week of games, but they're very similar, of course, both in makeup and results to the team they were last year. This actual score hasn't happened, but, you know, they feel like a 4-3 team. We saw a lot, you know, after some very turbulent opening to the season, a lot of big run games, your 8-2s, your 9-2s, 10-0, 8-0, 8-9-8. They've settled into some fairly close games, the 12-4 loss to Colorado notwithstanding. You know, they're a team that they have this weird thing they're doing where they'll score a couple times in an inning and then not score for the rest of the game. Against Colorado, it happened a couple times. They scored 5 early and then don't score again. They are who they are. I think, you know, it makes it a little bit tougher of a team to be too declarative about because they are very consistently the team that they have shown us to be over a 190 game sample almost at this point. In terms of things, though, to point at and look at and say, hey, there's a cool good thing. How about Yusei Kikuchi he is after a bounce back year last year, he looks great. 21 2/3 innings, a 2.08 ERA, 29 strikeouts. He has been excellent in his circles, turns through the rotation.
His circles look excellent as well.
Circles do look excellent. The curveball added to the fastball slider has given him a ton of extra depth, allowed him to go deeper into games, allowed him to get strikeouts, allowed him to look like a real lefty weapon in this rotation. That has been maybe my favorite surprise of the year so far.
I agree with you. I think that surprises me the most about 2024 Yusei Kikuchi is not even the results. There is that, but also just how much I enjoy watching him pitch.
Yeah.
He has very, I don't know if he would, I wouldn't call him the best pitcher on the team, but I'll explain what I mean in a sec, but I think he's the bravest pitcher on the team.
Okay.
And maybe that's, you know, small sample because he's had two starts against the Yankees. But he really, like, when the Sotos and the Judges are up, he just goes right after them. And yeah, he doesn't pitch around them. Like, you saw a lot, especially yesterday in the ninth, where, like, the Swanson and Meza were just, like, petrified to throw. Or maybe it wasn't. Whoever it was who was throwing to Judge and Soto late in the game yesterday. You could tell they were sort of, like, pitching around them until it got to a point where they had to not. Yeah. And you see that all the time in baseball. Like, that's not a unique thing to the Blue Jays or even necessarily a criticism of the guys who are doing it, because it's very common. But Kikuchi just says, I'm just going to throw you my good pitches and hit them or don't at those guys. And it's just, it's an attitude shift that I think clearly works very well for him. But it also, I think, gives a little bit of, you know, I'm going to sound like a radio call-in guy, but it gives a little bit of juice to the team that I think they've been missing for a couple years, of just like there's a fearlessness to Kikuchi that the team doesn't seem to have displayed in a couple years. And I don't think it's really spread its way to the rest of the club, but it sure is fun to watch for now.
Yeah, confidence is palpable in Kikuchi. There is one other guy I think that is pitching with great confidence and leading the way as well. Jose Berríos has also been.
Yeah, he just looks unbelievable.
He has been unbelievable. You know, four starts, ERA of 105, 25 and two-thirds innings. Just not giving up anything. The pitch mix looking incredible, crisp, great movement, great location. The control has looked absolutely excellent. It is funny, you track this team over a several year sample size and you don't have to look back. You look back, 2022 was like Berríos and Kikuchi were two of the worst starters in baseball, and you are like, what are they gonna do? Thank God they have Manoa, sort of conversation. And now you're looking at this and suddenly Gausman has the ERA of 8. And they are, you know, hopefully Yariel Rodriguez can fill the fifth starter role. But you now suddenly, in Berríos and Kikuchi, have two guys where 40% of the time you're coming out and going, man, we're getting great starts from our top end starters here. It's been a nice change of fortune. And Berríos, I mean, confidence is an understatement as the way he's pitching right now.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like the bona fide ace. Like, I think it's... He looks like the, you know, what we saw from Kevin Gausman last year and what we saw from Alek Manoah the year before and Robbie Ray. And, you know, that he's, at least so far, and last year as well. It's not like it's a, you know, we talked last show about this being game 170 or whatever of the 2023 season in a derogatory sense, but Kikuchi was very good, or Berríos was very good last year too. And so to see him sort of continue that, it really gives you that, like, every 5 days, doesn't even matter who they're playing. And obviously the crux of the team last season was, for the most part, the entire rotation was doing that. And clearly, as we have seen, and as we were, you and I sort of worried about preseason, that hasn't exactly been the case this year, outside of Berríos and Kikuchi. And I am maybe irrationally confident in Yariel Rodriguez as well.
Man, I love I am loving Yermo Rodriguez.
3.2 innings is all I need.
Yeah, no kidding. I love everything that he is doing. The slider is a legit weapon. The different arm slots on the fastball to maybe make up for not make up for, but to sort of disguise the way that it looks and the way that it's coming out. I thought he was so much fun to watch. A guy that looks the part, and again, use the word confidence, not to run it into the ground, but it didn't seem fazed at all by his major league debut, and didn't seem that anytime he got into trouble was really worried about it coming unraveling. I think a nice find and a nice piece to add to the depth of the puzzle. I am in on any Yariel Rodriguez video, any Yariel Rodriguez clips, any stories, any photos. Truly, fully in. That is, though, not everybody in the rotation has been super duper great. Kevin Gausman, ERA over 8. Again, we're talking about a very small sample size. It's 4 starts. It's 14 innings. And the velo and the stuff did come back a little bit at the end of this run. His most recent game, he was definitely throwing hard and only gave up 1 run. But your thoughts on sort of the early look at Kevin Gausman, who we know is sort of battling through a return from injury. He obviously came out in his very first game, pitched into the 5th, but has not pitched that deep and has had 2 of his 4 starts, some real shell shock, 11 runs given up in starts 2 and 3 against New York and Colorado.
Yeah, I am quite concerned about Kevin Gausman, and not really... it's not really the results that concern me. Like the results are a byproduct of the concern. And you know, I think again, it's only been 1 game, so I can't really tie this in. But after watching Swanson and Romano come in, you know, preseason arm injuries mixed with not having a preseason is never a good thing for a pitcher. Especially guys like Gausman, who's 33, and Swanson and Romano are both other side of 30, and it's, you know, I'm not saying that they're done by any means. I'm not worried about that, but I am worried about sort of the quality consistency that you require from all 3 of those guys, really, and I don't really know what I would suggest would be, like, the better move. Like, I get that you can't really put Gausman in Buffalo for a couple weeks with the way the team is right now. And actually, same with Swanson and Romano, because, like, we saw the state of the bullpen without those 2 guys and just how thin it was and, you know, relying on your Espinos and your Parsons and your Whites, etc. But I am worried about all 3 of those guys just because, you know, the shoulder soreness or elbow soreness in March is just never a good sign. And it worries me that they might fall prey to that classic, like, few bad outings in April, early May, shut them down for, whatever, 2-3 weeks, rehab them. They don't actually really start their season till, you know, July. It's like the old Hyunjin Ryu model. And again, like you said, very small sample, too small to judge, especially on the bullpen guys who have literally thrown 1 game. And like both thrown into, well, maybe not Swanson, but Romano, you know, closing out a game against a good team. But, you know, that's another argument. But I do worry just because shoulder, like, preseason injuries for pitchers are just never a good thing, and they're such fragile beings as we're seeing all across the league right now, and like the absolute wave of pitcher injuries, and whether that's the pitch clock, whether that's something else, I have no idea. But you know, we talked about this in our preview show and how the Jays last season had immaculate injury luck and scraped by. And the big fear this year was just that that injury luck wouldn't keep up, and odds are it wouldn't. And so, you know, I'm not saying these guys are pitching hurt. I'm not saying that there's necessarily a problem yet, but we're like, I don't know, two starts for Gausman and 2 weeks of games away for the other two guys from it actually, from it being a problem. Mm. So I would say I'm very worried about Gausman and the bullpen guys, but I'm certainly not out on them by any means.
Yeah. So I'm glad you segue into the bullpen guys. You know, I generally am a fairly hard line. Like, if a guy is in the major leagues, you have to treat him like a major leaguer. Like, you sort of, you know, if Romano's on the roster, then he's in there to close in for a game, sure, where they have a lead. And sort of same with Swanson, like, in that spot, especially with apparently Chad Green not being available. He's there to be used there. There is someone, like, Swanson didn't ever really look all that great in the minors. And Romano is, even in the best of times, a guy that makes you stomach in the throat a little bit as a closer. And Nate Pearson goes down after finally looking like the Nate Pearson we wanted to look like. It was some rough timing. There's a couple others like that. Tim Mesa is one where it's like, that's where Tim Mesa, if you told me Tim Mesa was cooked, I wouldn't be shocked. Again, it's a very small, I'd say this every time, it's a very small hip sample size. He's already appeared in 10 games and given up seven earned, already give up as many home runs in this season as he did all of last season, and half as many walks. And he appeared in nearly 70 games last year. He's a guy, he lost some velocity and was not a really upper echelon velocity guy, but it appears to be a problem. I wouldn't be surprised if Tim Mesa is bad one or two more times. I think he is somebody that is probably getting the Phantom DL treatment, and then you're going to see Pearson back up. Yeah, I mean, they're on the flip side, Jimmy Garcia has been unbelievable. He's been great.
We've seen that before, okay, to start a season from Jimmy as well.
We have.
I love it. It's when Garcia's on, he's a joy to watch. I'm just tamping the expectation breaks there a bit.
No, I appreciate that. And a bullpen, as we've said many times before, is like a living organism. It's you can't snapshot what's happened in any 20 game sample and expect it to be the way that the bullpen will be for the entire year, except for some small exceptions. But I do agree with you that there is some concern on these guys that are basically having their spring right now, and that's Swanson and Romano and Gausman. I don't think it's a shock that those are the guys that are scuffling out of the box here as pitchers. I think there is something to, like, you would like them to be a couple appearances deeper. Again, these things will probably work themselves out over the long term. I'm a little less concerned about Gausman than you are, and a little more, I mean, geez, Eric Swanson had a really tumultuous spring. Like, it was really two setbacks, a huge tragedy in his personal life. Like, it's not a blame on him. It's just like, it's a really tough circumstance for him to come in and be expected to be, you know, a ninth inning guy against the Yankees. It's just a really hard spot, and I feel for him because, you know, just a really, really, really tough couple months, I think, for him, and trying to get healthy and trying to get back and trying to be a contributor. A tough spot to be in for a guy that is, you know, important to the bullpen. They do have depth in Jimmy and Chad and Nate and Romano that he could be, you know, somebody that is given some time to turn things around. But Eric Swanson's important. Eric Swanson is an important reliever to this team and is a weapon for them. So some real concern over, you know, the difficulty that he's currently being put through as a contributor to this team out of the bullpen.
Certainly, yeah. And again, it was one game, so I'm not ready to throw the book at them yet. But I mean, at worst, at least those guys being back does take some of the heat off of things like Tim Meza being in 10 games and Trevor Richards being in 9 and Jimmy Garcia being in 8 and Genesis Cabrera being in 7, which would probably be 9 if he hadn't gone suspended, and Chad Green being in 7. Like, it's a lot of deep into the bullpen a lot early in the year.
Yeah. Yeah. We shall see. Let's take a quick pause. We'll come out and we'll talk on the other side of the ball. Well, okay, so we've dove into some of the feel-goods and not-so-goods about the pitching. I'll tell you what, something that has felt good and has been a they've-done-it-again borderline is Justin Turner has been a very good hitter, a guy that just has good at-bats, and on a team where sometimes approach or the quality of the at-bat can be frustrating to watch or... that's a polite way to put it, can be pretty annoying. Justin Turner has been reliably a balm to soothe what ails us.
Yeah, I mean, can't argue with anything he's done. He's done literally exactly his job, which is to hit the baseball. You know, he's got an OPS of 943. He's got 7 doubles already. It's amazing what happens when you sign real hitters to your offense. I will say, though, I know it's fun to be snarky, and Lord knows I like to do it, but I don't feel as down or as bad about the offense as I expected to.
Mm-hmm.
I feel down about certain guys, but on the whole, despite, let's say, the usual frustrations, if you will, it's not as god awful and joy. It's less joyless than I expected. Let's put it that way.
Sure, they're not. They're, you know, they had gotten no hit when we last spoke. So
yeah, that's very true.
That certainly hurts a little bit. Kevin Biggio has played very well, and don't look now, or do look now, depending on whether you want to look or not. But Dalton Varsho leads the team in home runs. He is second on the team, or third on the team, pardon me, in WRC plus or OPS plus. Dalton Varsho, one of my, I would say, few things bring me as much joy, I think, watching this team than when Dalton Varsho plays well, because he makes great plays defensively. We saw him make some really nice plays in really big spots in the outfield, and then 2 home runs the other day. Dalton Varsho, all he has to do is run into some home runs, run into 4 home runs a month, and we're absolutely thrilled with the output for Dalton Varsho.
I mean, like, his first, whatever it was, 2 weeks of plate appearance was absolute torture to watch, but I hope he keeps up, because I think he is one of those guys that we talk about a lot outside of your, you know, let's call them the big 3 or big 4 if you want to include Justin Turner, where if he's going, it really makes the whole thing work. Like, you can, if he's going, you know, Danny Jansen's back, if he can be, you know, a fraction of what we want Danny Jansen to be, just an improvement over Alejandro Kirk at the plate, then all of a sudden, you know, your Kevin Kiermaier, your defensive specialists, basically, who don't hit, become much less of a burden.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Davis Schneider's obviously looking great, Ernie Clement's looking solid, and so, you know, if Varsho can figure it out, and you sort of, that outfield swap or those outfield offensive death days where it's Varsho looking lost and Kiermaier looking lost, and suddenly the lineup's just toast. You know, if Varsho doesn't look lost, then all of a sudden the lineup is pretty presentable.
Speaking of looking lost and the flip side of things being presentable, how does it hit your ears that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa has an OPS 60 points higher than Bo Bichette and 40 points higher than George Springer.
Truly couldn't have happened any other way.
Well, on one hand, hey, that Kiner Falefa hasn't been so bad. It's not an all-time bad signing. He is third on the team in WAR per Fangraphs.
I won't lie. I've caught myself having a couple minutes of going, I kind of like this Kiner Falefa guy.
So predictable. It was so predictable. What happens to this team. That's what happens to this team. The maligned guys end up being better than you think, and the guys that you are counting on just rip your heart out. It's just the way that this team goes. I'm almost not surprised.
No, I'm not surprised at all. It's again, like what could you, what else did you think was going to happen after this offseason? Yeah. So are you wanting to focus on Kiner Falefa being better than expected, or the other chuckleheads?
Well, I think the kind of flip the conversation is pretty quick. It's
he's better than expected. That's nice.
Better than expected. He is as advertised defensively. Like we aren't sitting here missing Matt Chapman for much. There's the occasional pop you're gonna get from Chapman, but like defensively, he has fit right in. They continue to be a very good defensive team. He's been an excellent third baseman, 96th percentile fielding wise, and you know that feels about right. And he's been putting pretty good swings on the ball, which a guy that, you know, we knew from what we looked at and what you've seen and what you remember from watching him is generally a pretty bad hitter, has just done a good job of, like, getting his swing off on the ball. I think that's all there really is to say about it. The other side is that, and this has happened many times before. We've been through this before, and we come out the other side at the end of the year and go, wow, he led the league in hits again. But it has not been pretty for Bo Bichette through 17 games for him.
No, certainly not.
Don't like it.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with Bo. Like, we had this conversation last time we spoke, and it was kind of like, oh, we're not worried. He always turns it around. And, like, I still think that's true, but it's getting closer and closer to the time to worry, I think. And then Vlad is just what he is. I think
they have managed to be 9th and 10th in WAR for Fangraphs, Guerrero and Bichette. It's like, it's crazy. It's Varsho, Turner, Kiner Falefa, Biggio, Clement, Springer, Kirk, Schneider, then Guerrero Jr. and Bichette at 0.1. Been about as valuable as Kevin Kiermaier is what the Fangraphs is telling you.
And at least it seems like both of their defense has regressed as well.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Vlad was already rock bottom.
That's Bo's true. Bo looked like he was turning the corner last year.
He had an ugly first week defensively. I don't know that it's been better.
It's a lot of high throws.
Listen, Vlad at first is what it is. The footwork is what it is. The speed is what it is. There are some ground outs where it's just like, I cannot believe he's out at first on that. I mean, the same goes with Kirk, but there's some where it's like it bounces off two guys' gloves and they still pick it up and throw him out. That is what it is. You know, Vlad, at least it's a 118 WRC plus. At least it is a 112 OPS plus. That's a 715 OPS. It's still at least 200 points lower than you would expect Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s OPS to be. Like, two doubles, three homers. It's still well below the expectation of what the baseline for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. should be. But it's the same old story where it's like he's at least been an above league average hitter, but it certainly hasn't been the this guy cannot be pitched to right now conversation. There are flashes. Vlad is a very, like, the eye test on Vlad does match up with how he's doing, I think. You can sort of tell from the quality of at-bats what you're getting. There is that when he is feeling jumpy, when he's feeling froggy, the swing decisions are truly mind-blowing. And when he's locked in, he is the exact opposite. He's sharp. He knows what he needs to attack. The launch angle is what it is from time to time, but, you know, he still manages to hit the ball 450 feet every so often. It's very clear when Vlad is and isn't going well, I think, based on just swing decisions alone. And it's a little harder with Bichette because sometimes when he's playing well, the swing decisions are still bad. It's just when he is not going well, that stuff looks extra bad. And it is currently at extra bad. Some of the Bichette at-bats, you're just like, what am I even looking at? What is this? Just not fun to watch him flail and chase and swing and swing and swing. It's again, this is a fish swimming, this is a bird flying. But when it's not going well for Bichette, boy, is it ever like, man, what is this approach? What are you doing? Are you even watching Justin Turner hit? Does it even exist to you in the same planet Justin Turner's at bats?
I have a Vlad question for you.
Please.
In the midst of this week, maybe it was last week, I'm not sure, a quote came from Vlad regarding a possible extension
with yes.
the Blue Jays. And Vlad's quote was something like, I would love to, the Jays haven't reached out to me yet, focused on the season, blah, blah, blah. Right now, Vlad makes, I believe, $19.9 million a year.
Yes.
This is sort of a two-part question, but it's linked together for you here. You, I, every Blue Jays fan in the world, really, has spent the last 2 years going, man, he passes the eye test, and man, like, if he can just figure it out. About Vlad. First off, at what point do we stop saying that? And at what point do we just allow him to be the player he is, potentially? And the second part of that question is, if you were to extend him today, putting aside the realities of would you, because that's a separate question, but if you were to extend him today, what would you pay him?
So number one, part of the problem with this, and I think there's a sneaky, you know, in the same way that we all say he passes the eye test, I think there's this sneaky, like, admission in all of our heads is if they traded Vlad, you're almost certain that he would figure it out with the new team, right?
Of course, yeah.
Like, if he goes to, I don't even know, name your team immediately would just become the guy that you think he is. Immediately. Vlad on the Phillies or whatever it may be. He would immediately be a 40 home running guy again. So I think that's part of what is the concern. But, you know, we do this from time to time is like the more evidence we have of the guy that he has been versus the guy that he was in that 1 year. 2021 looks like the outlier and 118, 120 WRC pluses, which is the exact same that he had last year and the exact same that he has this year. Mounts as a little closer to indicative of just who the guy is. Maybe instead of, you know, being a MVP best hitter in the league kind of guy, maybe he's an 800 OPS kind of guy. You know, maybe he's right. maybe he's a high 700 OPS kind of guy, and we should learn to live with that. The thing is, high 700 OPS guys who don't run and don't play defense and play first don't get extensions. Those guys don't get $300 million, right? Because because as you said, he's making $20 million in arbitration. I don't see him even coming to the table to talk about anything less than $30 million a year.
Right. And this is kind of that's kind of the root of my question. Yeah.
Yeah. He's 25. Are you saying, you know, the deal is going to have to, it's probably going to be 8 to 10 years. And I don't think he comes to the table for less than $30 million. So can you find an extension? It's very difficult. And this is, you know, I think sometimes Toronto Sports Radio will frame it as you have to pick one of Vlad or Bo. It's very tough because from the quotes and from what we can gather from Vibe is like Vlad wants to be here and the team doesn't want to re-sign him because they know they can't get the contract right. And Bo is the exact opposite. He doesn't seem like it almost seems certain he's going to at least test free agency and see what he can get and who could get him. So it's not as easy as like, oh, we choose Bo. It's like Vlad seems to be the one who wants to sign, but it will be a lot harder. And Bo is the one that you're not going to be able to sign, even if big picture, maybe it provides you a little more value. It's a very hard puzzle, man, because the answer, like, again, I don't see him. you know, he's going to get, if he gets the free agency, a team is going to buy the potential because he's going to be a free agent at 26, right? He's going to be entering his age 27 season, and a team's going to say, "We'll give you 5 years. We'll give you that's no problem. That sure. Should the Jays be that team? Will the Jays be that team? It's sort of that damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Because you're locking him in, and as we've said, maybe right now he's a true 800 OPS guy. But the reality is you don't have a spare 800 OPS guy coming through the system. You don't have the, like, you think re-signing Vlad would be bad. Imagine not re-signing Vlad sort of conversation, right? It's like, then they have nobody. It's complicated. It's really complicated. And you're right to ask it now. It's going to get a lot louder throughout as they approach this trade deadline and this coming off season and into next year. The real noise about Vlad and Bo, but especially Vlad, it's going to get really loud because we see this happen a lot when any other team signs an extension to their young guys. We see it. It's going to happen a lot more as that deadline of sorts looms for a decision to be made on Vladdy. I don't know. Where do you land on that? Because I sort of think, like, it feels like 10 years, 300 is the starting point, and that seems absurd right now. It just seems like an insane idea to do. It seems like an immediate regret you would have, but also not having the potential Vlad talent also seems like trouble. So I don't know that there is an easy way out of this or an easy answer.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, if they're in a situation where he's walking, I think it's a new guy's problem to deal with.
Yes.
In the first place. Which, I'm not even saying that as an anti-Atkins thing. That just takes a lot of baggage out of the decision. And mm-hmm. that takes a lot of the, you know, well, we have to sign him in case he becomes great out of it a little bit, I think. Because, like, it's one thing if it's your guy and you let him walk and he becomes great. But if he's not your guy and you let him walk and becomes great, it's like, well, that happens a lot and whatever. Yeah. From a fan perspective, that's obviously quite different. But I also don't think you can make your 10-year contract signings based on hypotheticals. Like, if you're giving him the Mega Millions deal, you better be damn certain. Especially in a franchise that operates close to the top of the payroll, but clearly does have a limit, as we have seen this year. You don't want that much money tied up in a guy just in case. Or just in case you miss out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, to your point, yeah. They already have $20 million. It's not like right. It would be a dramatic raise. They're already paying him top of the market for what the most you could probably possibly pay in ARB.
Exactly. And so, you know, I think I personally, at the moment, and this is where we are right now, I think it's a trickier conversation for the narrative and the fan base than it is for the front office.
Yes.
Because that sort, I believe, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I believe that idea of if he goes somewhere else, you know he's going to figure it out. Well, I also believe that. I also think it kind of doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because then he's not on our team and who cares?
Right.
Like, sure, if you let him walk and you don't pay him the money, that's because he wasn't worth that money at that time. And lots of guys play themselves into contracts all the time. The other side of it that I find genuinely very interesting, because I do not have an answer, is, you know, we have seen in the last, especially in the last two off seasons, but really this off season, just a real misreading of the market.
Oh, and yes.
Guys sort of, I don't want to say betting on themselves, but going to free agency and expecting the big payday and it not coming.
For sure.
So obviously this, as sports leagues go, run by billionaires, baseball is a cheap league. Most teams don't like paying guys and don't like giving out the big deals and would rather just get their gate than invest. So I wonder if Vlad has two more years in his current state. Again, not even bad, just his current state of whatever he said, 715 OPS. That is 200 points below his expectation, but maybe his reality. I agree with you that he's not going to go to the table for less than 8, 10 years, 280, 300 million. But, like, I just have to wonder at this point if that's even going to come from anywhere. And it seems to me that the Jays are far more likely to overpay him to save, I don't want to say save face, but to save the narrative, I guess, than any other team is to pay him that money.
Yes. It reminds me a little bit of the last two off seasons with Cody Bellinger, right? Is he like,
right.
It's very easy to just go, oh, this guy's going to make $200 million. Like, just how could he not? And then you get there and you go, okay, but who actually is the market for Bellinger? It's like, it's the Cubs and it's maybe the Giants and it's us. And I think Guerrero is a similar conversation of like, it's easy to sit here and say he's not going to go anywhere for less than, we'll say $25 million. But then like, I don't know what team is out there and saying we got to give Vladimir Guerrero Jr. $25 million. And there is, as you mentioned, sort of the chance the Jays are the ones to overpay him. There is a little bit of like you are wandering the wilderness a little bit again in terms of who the face of your franchise is and who your star, for lack of a better word, is. Like he is pretty entrenched here as a guy that people know and as a guy that it's all built around and performance. You know, overall performance taken out of the equation, he is like a huge piece of what they're doing. And when you get rid of, you would be getting rid of Vlad, and I sort of am assuming again that Bo is gone at that same time. You're back to wandering the wilderness. You're back to like really mm-hmm. not knowing where the next version of the team comes from and who you're building around it and hoping that you have some great drafts or you pull off some great deals. Like you could probably, I think this promise is proven, like if they really had to, they could probably put a 500 team on the field again. They could patch it together and make it happen with some cheap signings and make the team be fine. You know, what Vlad and Bo are supposed to represent is a team that is a contender and makes the playoffs every year. And they've managed to make the playoffs. They just haven't taken that next thing because, you know, Vlad hasn't refound the 2021 form and Bo continues to like just miss things with injuries at inopportune times and cold streaks, and they just haven't quite lined up the planets in the right way. Yeah, it's going to be interesting, and it's going to get as you know you're right to point it out now. I think it's going to get a lot louder as we approach the 2026 offseason.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything else on the hitting side other than, you know, Kevin Kiermaier, it's not been great. Alejandro Kirk, it has not been great. David Schneider, it has been great. David Schneider continues to be a welcome piece of the puzzle. Anything else offensively, or shall we move on and open up the mailbag?
I'm just ready to start the count on when we get to make noise that Arelvis isn't called up yet.
Boy, oh boy. Yeah, grand slam the other night, and another home run, a go-ahead home run today. I made the bold proclamation in the preseason that I think we see him. The thing going on right now is that everybody else is hitting. Kiner Falefa's hitting, Clement is hitting, Schneider is hitting. Kevin Biggio, you can't pull him out of the lineup. 133 OPS plus, 787. He's 70 points higher than Vlad. 280 points higher than Alejandro Kirk, depending on how you want to slice it up. I think he's, you know, this is what they're looking for. I think June, July, I think we're going to have some more Elvis Martinez in our lives. That's my guess.
I hope so.
He hits big home runs.
He does.
What's not to like? Okay. Let's quick pin in that. We'll answer a trio of mailbag questions and then wrap it up for another week after this. All right, Jake, we opened up the old mailbag on the old X. We opened up the old X mailbag. Got it late. Got to it late. because we didn't decide to do this until late, and then I fell asleep on the couch. So that's what happened. Andrew Robertson, always reliable with a mailbag question, asks, since the Jays continue to struggle on work from dome days, any stories where you also struggle to work from the dome that is your home? I know you've been working from home since like 2018?
2019, yeah.
5 years, right. Jake. That's 5 years ago.
It's crazy. I love it. I can't imagine working not from home, frankly.
I need to go in. People need to see me.
I get it. Like, my wife works from home as well, and she used to be in an office, and she's also very much team work from home. But like I understand the desire to go in.
Yeah.
Like I definitely get it. But I love it. I love working from home.
I need to be seen twice a week. I go in twice a week is where I'm mandated, and it's the perfect amount.
Is that the perfect amount for you personally, yes, or the perfect amount for how you feel as a employee?
It's for me personally. I can see the arguments for the way certain people are that it's better for them to work from home. I am somebody who needs I think part of it is, you know, I live out here in the suburbs. My social battery doesn't charge up in the way that I'm sure yours gets to from casually seeing friends and impromptu hangouts, and you know, I have a little bit less of that with the wife and a kid and living out here and having to make plans pretty far in advance for something to happen. It's a little social battery. It's a little change of scenery. It's a little you get dressed and you're you know, dressing up, and I'm meeting client side people, having client conversations, and just sort of like feeding off energy and working in a collaborative way, because a lot of the work I do is collaborative with my team, with a creative team, with a strategy team, with a client team. So that is like useful for me, and also I'm a personality hire, quite frankly. So I'm good at mediating conflict in the company, but more than 2 days, I think people would start to see that I'm not really doing anything. So they would be like, "Wait a minute, what would you say he's doing?" So I work from home extended periods, like a full month of work from home is not great for me. My previous two jobs that I really struggled at were full time remote work from home. And I just don't have the discipline, to be honest with you. I don't have the discipline to those moments in between meetings, not like either watch TV or play a video game or completely piss off. I just don't have the discipline. So, you know, I am in my 5 days a week, it's day at home, day in the office, day at home, day in the office, day at home, and then it's weekend. So
I mean, I guess that breaks up the week well, which is nice.
It breaks it up, and it keeps me from getting into a rhythm of like monotony. Like, it keeps it fresh, and so it just helps me sort of in my addled way my brain works of like it always feeling fresh, and then I have assignments each week that I'm like, okay, this is something that will be good to do in the office, and this will be something good to do when I can focus in. So I would say like extended working from home is really bad for me. It's just like, I don't get to know my teammates. I don't get to know anybody. They don't get to know me. And then, you know, my sense of humor or the way that I talk about things doesn't translate, and they don't really understand. And I come off as this enormous weirdo versus like a generally positive personality that I think, can help rub off on my coworkers. So, I struggle to work from home full time. It would not be good for my style. But again, I could totally see why it would be the way to go for a lot of people. And do I need to go in? Could I do my job? Take away my personal tendencies? Is my job doable without going in? Absolutely.
Right.
But you 5 years. Then that now going to an office would be weird for you.
Oh yeah, I'd hate it. I went in before I had my current job. I did from home. So this would have been like 2018. I did like a few days at a part-time thing in an office, and like I didn't enjoy it. And like, granted, there was no one at this office that I could like have any social connection with.
Sure.
But still, like, just the concept, it's not for me, which is funny because like when I do acting work, obviously it's all collaborative and all with people, and I love it. So I think it's just, you know, I've never really been you know, when we were at the score and we went from sort of like creative nonsense to stricter nonsense, the office side of like the, I think I just don't like having a job.
Is the thing. I mean, that's, amen, brother. It's the worst. Amen. Yeah. If I could avoid that, then I could stay home all day, no problem.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Peter Shepard asks us, who sees more time at AAA this year? Schneider, Abbigio, and who goes down first?
Oh, neither, baby. They're up.
They do feel like they are up. I think if there was going to be one, I think maybe Schneider. But it seems unlikely. It seems pretty unlikely. The thing about the Schneider, right, is then the person that you bring up has to cover the outfield. And it seems like the guy that's coming up, if somebody comes up, is going to be Aurelvis, right?
Yeah.
That would that would make you think Biggio, but he's been too good, and he's just too good of a piece. I think he's really figured out himself and figured out what he does and how he can improve. And you know, it's in a weird way, like going to get Kiner Falefa versus bringing back Chapman, and for all the reasons to not love the Kiner Falefa thing, part of the benefit is like you had to play Matt Chapman every day. You just had to. You don't go and get Matt Chapman and then not play him. There's a little bit more like sing for your supper, like earn your at-bats right now, and I think that's fit really nicely with where Biggio is. I could see I mean, Schneider had that 0-for-31 last year stretch. I could see Schneider getting a little cold and getting sent down to heat up, but I don't expect it. I don't expect either one of them to spend any time.
No, I think they both stay up, and I think if you're bringing Aurelvis up, it's to hit, because he's got like, despite his offensive numbers, he also has like 11 errors or something.
He's been really bad at second.
Like, if you're bringing him up, I think it's more likely you see like Vogelbach go.
That's good. That's a good shout, actually. That's well done. Paul Adam, is this obsession with sports betting a passing fad, like the Hold'em boom of the 2000s, or is it something we have to live with forever? What do you think?
Both. I think the Hold'em boom is a perfect comparison, because that seemed like it was going to be the biggest thing forever, and there was poker on TV all the time, and it was so boring. And like, you know, TV networks were basing full programming in primetime around it. I think when it quote-unquote fades, it will still be more prominent than the poker boom is today.
Yes.
Because sports gambling has been around forever, will continue to be around forever. And it's just a more... It's not as niche a market as poker. And so I think it will... I don't think it's ever going to go away, and I don't think it's ever going to sort of fade in notoriety the way poker did. But I do think that, like all dot-com things and like all gambling things and all fads, it will obviously fade from the overwhelming noise it is today.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I agree with you in general. It's never going to go away. People are always going to be betting on sports. I don't even know if it's a bold prediction, they're not going to be able to advertise it the way that they are right now. That a restriction on that is coming. I would be shocked if people are advertising sports gambling at all in a few years. I think, I don't know any single customer that is like, I'm loving the fact that sports gambling is the only commercial that comes on during sports. Even people that like sports gambling, like the commercials are doing them no favors.
I love sports gambling and I hate the commercials.
Yeah, I think something, it's probably going to go the way of tobacco, likely. It's like people still smoke, but you can't advertise it on television. I think that is what is coming for sports gambling, because, you know, a lot of kids watch sports, man. They just do. Like, it's really strange to, I think about my son all the time, and like, he doesn't, obviously we're not totally comprehending what he's watching, but like it won't be long before, if he's watching sports, he's going to be inundated with gambling content and likely going to be asking me about it. And I'm going to tell him, but it's like, geez, If I was being hit over the head with gambling content the way that we currently are when I was a kid, like, I'd be gambling on sports at 13. Like, I just would have been. I was obsessed with sports at 13. How could I not be also gambling on it if I could? I would have found a way to do it, and I think today's kids will find a way to do it, and I think it's going to go away as a primary source of advertising, and that'll be very interesting because they seem to be sponsoring everything, right? These content, well, it seems to be the only thing that's being sponsored.
I think the kid thing is actually a really interesting point, because, like, when I was a kid, so, like, I'm saying, like, 15, 16, not 13, but, like, 15, 16, the convenience store, like, the corner store at the end of my street was run by this old woman who clearly didn't know what Proline even was, really. And so my friend and I would gamble on football every week. But it was this, like, you know, not like it felt like buying beer with a fake ID kind of thing.
Yes.
Like, it was just like, oh, I wonder if we'll get away with it today. And, you know, now obviously with the internet, that's, you know, it's a whole other ease thing. So, like, the kid focus, you know, kids are always going to find a way to do the thing they're not supposed to do.
Of course.
But like you say with tobacco, like, you can't advertise it on TV 8 times a commercial break. Now, if it's alcohol, that's fine. But
yes.
But yeah, I agree with you. I think it will. I definitely think the ubiquity of the ads will go away, but the actual, like, system and the actual prevalence of sports gambling, I don't think it's going to be made illegal again, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. But I don't think it'll be omnipresent in every space. I mean, will it still be online advertising? Will it still be in the stadiums? Probably. I think that's we might be past the point of return on that. Like, they're building sports books inside these places.
Yeah.
In some spots, so that might not, that we might be past the point of return there. But, you know, you make the point. It's the fact that you can do it on your phone. It's the fact that you can do it without proving who you are. That is pretty the big piece of this, right? It's like the buying beer, the fake ID idea. It's like, what if you just typed an app and the beer got delivered to you and you didn't have to prove, you didn't have to show up at the door. You're just like,
yeah,
that sort of the deal we're talking about. So I think that is probably where we are headed, but good question. And hard to believe how much poker used to be on.
It's crazy.
Crazy. Okay, that's it for another week. The Blue Jays are out west. They're in San Diego all of this weekend. Look at that. Friday, Saturday night, and then Sunday afternoon, and then fly back to the middle of the country to play Kansas City for 4 games, 7:40, 7:40, 7:40, 2:10 p.m. on Thursday, April 25th. I'll make the bold proclamation that we will talk to you then. Until then, anything else, Jake, between now and the end of the show?
No. I think that's
great. I think I will probably see you this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I'll see you Saturday.
Can't wait. Lovely. So, yeah, that'll be fun. And until then, we wish you a great week. We say go Jays, and we thank you so much for being a part of Less Than Jays.